Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. This week, one of the regional governors in Uzbekistan made headlines with his outrageous remarks against his male employees wearing beards and female employees wearing headscarves. Thanks to local reporters, this news went viral, which led to his rare apology, but his remarks are far from being an isolated case in what appears to be a growing trend of intolerance in Central Asia against basic religious rights, which mostly orchestrated by the people in power. Today we are here to discuss how to interpret this trend, what's causing this, what appears to be the objective, and where authorities stand in this. To do so, I'm joined by Commissioner Nadina Maenza from the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, who has recently visited Uzbekistan. Aruka Orankizi is joining us, who's the researcher at the TRT World, who is originally from Kyrgyzstan, and she wears hijab. Rustam Gulov, a blogger and civil rights activist from Tajikistan, who was detained and forcefully his beards were shaved. Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, blog Kishlok Owazi is with us. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Very nice to have you. Let's start with you, Bruce, from Uzbekistan. Tell us, please, the story of Fergana regional governor. What did he say and why it was so controversial?
Well, I don't want to repeat everything he said exactly, but I mean, the bottom line was that certainly he wanted all the men to shave their beards, and he actually told the women that he would shove their hijabs down their throat if they kept wearing them. So it was one of the strongest statements we've heard. You know, not just the fact that he was commenting on whether they could wear a beard or whether they could wear a hijab, but it was very abusive language. Mm-hmm. You know, and as you mentioned in your intro, unfortunately, this seems to be like the trend. Now, you know, he was taken to task for it, you know, because he was caught. But as you mentioned, it's not an isolated case, and you have to wonder how much of this is actually tolerated by officials, not just in Uzbekistan, but in other places in Central Asia.
On that, just I wanted to give you a hint, Bruce, just to talk about a little bit in the background of this issue. So last week, we heard the astonishingly crazy story from another region in Uzbekistan where a school principal cut off hairs of students, which he thought is long. And we also know a court case in Tashkent by female students of Islamic University against being banned from studying Islam because of her headscarves. So tell us a little bit background of this controversy.
This is actually, obviously, this has been going on for more than 20 years now. You know, it was partly a reaction to the rise of some, at least in the case of the beard, certainly. That's where it started, was it was partly a reaction to the rise of some of these extremist groups, Islamic extremist groups. And I can remember Karimov, Uzbekistan's first president, Islam Karimov, making a statement that about how unfortunate it was that young men these days had these unkempt beards, you know, and that the older generations, that when they wore beards, they kept them properly, they trimmed them, you know, and everything. So he was already hinting that, you know, people that had certainly beards that just grew out and weren't combed through and everything were somehow related to extremism or on the road to extremism. Mm-hmm. And that became more of a mainstream kind of thought. And then they were trying to invent their own culture, post-Soviet space, all that. So with the hijab and other articles of clothing, the government started to tell people that this isn't our traditional clothing. And they kept saying, you know, this is Arab clothing or something. And so we're not going to accept that because it's not part of our tradition and our culture. You know, and beards and other things just kind of went along with that. They set this model of how your physical appearance and your dress code could be, you know, based on their own concerns that some small segment of their population might be attracted to more extremist views in the Islamic world.
Let's bring in Commissioner here. You know, again, these are the cases which were spotted and reported by some courageous journalists. God knows what else is happening, and we know nothing about them. Commissioner Mainza, do you like to jump in here, given the fact that you walked back Uzbekistan's ranking in your latest report on religious freedom? So what were some of the reasons behind your decision?
Now, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, we still recommend that Uzbekistan is listed as a country of particular concern, but the State Department took them off their list and put them on their watch list. We are still recommending the CPC designation, but we just, as you mentioned, visited last month and met with high-ranking officials, activists, faith leaders, and had some private discussions too. And the one thing that kept coming up was this fear of quote political Islam, which is how the government officials would phrase it to me. You know, they're afraid of becoming Afghanistan. And, you know, so we heard a lot of stories about how, you know, even to be honest, that there's 11 steps to approve a house of worship or a religious organization. It's one of the most difficult in the world. And I was told by one high-ranking official that that's to stop radical Islam or political Islam. They need that many steps. And in terms of the non-Muslim houses of worship, they don't want to approve too many of those that would upset the majority population. So they're, you know, they talk about reforms, but yet the interference on religious affairs with these actions are real. I mean, obviously, we heard before our trip about forced beard shaving incident, you know, in Tashkent that was about 100 men. While we were there, everyone assured us it was a mistake and that, you know, they fired people, they made changes. But then when we left, we heard about more. So it does appear that they're continuing this. One other point I wanted to bring up is we were informed that the government had called a private convening of imams from around the country, and they explicitly instructed them against growing or encouraging long beards, and also promoted the defending to stop promoting the wearing of headscarves for women or religious caps for men. So we thought that was significant that the government is pushing hard against this practice of their faith.
Yeah, it was my mistake. So Uzbekistan is still on the list of the countries of particular concern on your list, but the change
on our list, but not the State Department, right?
They're not on the State Department.
So, list, right? Because they had made some progress, but then it seems they kind of stopped for a little bit. So we're trying to push them to continue to make changes towards religious freedom.
Right. So we will get back to the question of how the authorities explain their actions in a bit. I'm particularly interested to hear your observations from your visit and meetings that you had with the officials. But before that, Commissioner, there's another country in Central Asia which often forgotten in the discussion like this, not because situation is ideal there. In fact, I guess it's worse, which is Turkmenistan. This country is always at the bottom of your annual reports on religious freedom. Do you like to tell us a little bit what are some of the main issues there when it comes to the type of issues we are talking about today?
So, unfortunately, I haven't been there, so I don't have the same sort of background in terms of problems. But we have, of course, recommended that it be a country of particular concern because it's clamped so hard down on all religious freedom. And we have not seen any movement towards opening that up.
Yeah. As someone who closely watched Turkmenistan and having previously served as the director of RFL's Turkmen service, I can say that it's beyond imagination for people to do anything which is not officially sanctioned. And growing beards for young people and wearing headscarves for a female is the type of actions which puts you in immediate trouble. So with no further questions. So people can't even dare going that direction. So I, you know, so that's the situation in Turkmenistan. Let's move on to Tajikistan, Rustam. So what we are talking about is what we hear from other people. You are, in fact, one of the victims of this policy. Tell us what happened to you.
It was in 2015, some years ago, when I just walking on some of the streets, some police officers, they asked me, why do I have beard? But I said that it's my right, and nobody prohibited to have beard. And then they become nervous, and they detained me and transferred to the police department. And they shaved my beard there. This is my case. This is the situation. But for some years nowadays, I think the situation become a little bit better. But by any way, there is very much legal prohibitions to have beard, to wear this headscarves for women in universities, in the schools, and not only for students, but also for teachers. And also, you cannot access to the government buildings if you have beard or if you wear headscarf.
So it doesn't look like that things are getting better there. So this is your story from Khojan, Rustam. Let me share another data from Khatlon region of Tajikistan so that we comprehend the size and scope of this problem. Mm-hmm. According to the Tajik service of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, in 2015, only in Khatlon, nearly 13,000 men were forced to shave their beards. Additional tens of thousands of people were fingerprinted. Many others were detained or fined. So let's bring in Aroka here. She's patiently waiting for us. Thank you very much. So, Aroka, you wear hijab yourself. In your country, Kyrgyzstan is also known relatively tolerant when it comes to people's feelings. But earlier, we have seen billboards popping up describing headscarves as something of alien and promoting Kyrgyzstan as traditional clothing. Were they just sound bites, or there were more into it beneath the sound bites? Where these challenges are seen in your country?
Thank you. But before coming to this question, I would like to, first of all, just bring this framework of why these religious institutions are so much feared by the Central Asian governments. And while we nominally see the support in Kyrgyzstan to these religious so-called societies, we see that these institutions are largely managed by the state. So before understanding this correlation between the state and the religion, specifically in Kyrgyzstan, I think we have to understand the concept of traditional Islam that has been widely used by previous President Almazbek Atambayev.
Right.
So this new Islamic groups in many ways differed from the practices of local so-called traditional Islam. And so traditional Islam is best described as the Islam that is within the context of post-Soviet country. So repeatedly, this phrase has been used by the state public figures to ensure that Muslims support the statehood of their homeland and live in peace and harmony with other faiths. So what we see in Kyrgyzstan is this traditionalist clash between Islamists and the traditionalist movements, and emphasizing that a Kyrgyz identity predating Islam and whatever was seen after Islam is not a part of Kyrgyz tradition. And Almazbek Atambayev, he even said that Islamic denominations are different from local Hanafi Islam, are imposing the cultures of Arabs, Bangladesh, and Pakistan, and confusing their culture with Islam. So this Kyrgyzstan's self-described traditionalist movement actually do harm women who do wear headscarf, and they, by time, do get abused or ridiculed from the people on the street on a regular basis. I would even say that this concept of traditional Islam would be applied not only to Kyrgyzstan, but to other states like Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and even to a very big extent, Russia.
Right. So the argument by the previous president, Almazbek Atambayev, emphasizing on the traditional Kyrgyz Islam, what has been the implications of that to people like you who wears hijab or young man who wears beards? What has been some of the practical implications on the ground?
So there are some non-traditional Muslims, like the followers of Ahmadiyya movement, who also complain of problems with security registration and official abuse, or like more generally. So religious minorities who are not officially registered or who are not officially recognized by the state do complain of harassment in the workplace for being accused of Wahhabi. This is a derogatory term that is widely used in Central Asian countries to condemn all politicized form of the faith, as well as every Muslim who refused to be subjected to the strict rules imposed by the political authorities. And particularly, this is seen in Turkmenistan as very highly, which is basically damages the security issues within the individual of Muslims who are trying to practice their own religion outside of their homes and trying to integrate to the society.
Right. Okay, so we don't have anyone from Kazakhstan among us today, but it has been a constant issue out there. I'm particularly thinking about tens of schoolgirls in southern Kazakhstan who are denied education because they wear a hijab. Bruce, do you like to jump in? Tell us about that or any other case that you recall with regards to this particular topic in Kazakhstan?
Well, you know, Commissioner Maenza mentioned earlier that there was, you know, there have been lawsuits in places, and you'd mentioned also in Uzbekistan about trying to wear hijab and go to schools and stuff. And Kazakhstan has actually been seen this quite often, especially in the western part of the country. There's been several cases, even more than that, women who were denied access to schools because of their headwear. And officials have sided with the schools on this almost consistently, you know, saying they can't wear these if they wear the hijab. job. They can't get into school, you know, and so it's really, they kind of follow suit. It's not much different than the other countries in that way at all, you know, and once again, it's one of those things where they fall back on these supposed traditions that they can bring up and say it wasn't part of our culture to wear this kind of clothing. They're imitating a foreign culture, and so on that basis, we reject it, when in fact, we know or suspect strongly that the officials seem to equate this kind of clothing with Islamic radicalism for some reason or another. I mean, I called in an article a couple years ago, I called it gateway garb. And that seems to be how they look at this. It's right. Like, you know, if you're going to wear a hijab, you're one step away from being recruited by one of these extremist groups in the Middle East or something, or maybe even you fall into some evil group that's present on the soil of Central Asia somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it makes you somehow susceptible because of what you're wearing.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of the causes of this trend and where authorities stand in this and what can be done about this. So let's continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Commissioner Nadine Mainza of U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Aruka Urankezi, researcher at the TRT World, Rustam Gulov, a blogger and civil rights activist from Tajikistan, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi, I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for Southern Central Asia here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing a growing sign of religious repression in Central Asia. So let's start with you again, Commissioner Mainza. You recently visited Uzbekistan. So how did the authorities explain their position behind cases like we just discussed involving the governor's remarks, involving the students being denied education because of the headscarves and things like that?
I think Bruce's point that he just said about how they look at it as a gateway garb, one step away from being recruited, I think is right on. There's this fear. They kept talking about secular Uzbekistan, being afraid of political Islam, being afraid of changing their beautiful culture. And there's a lot of fear of what that could mean. And the way, you know, they represent that is a little bit differently, but it does seem, you know, at the end of the day, when I get pulled aside by government officials after having a meeting, the conversation would be something like, you know, we can't go that way. We just can't. It's not safe. We have to have rules. We have to keep everyone from becoming extremists. And they really see both a clampdown on the Muslim population, but also being careful with the non-Muslims to not irritate the Muslims. So it seemed to be this odd Soviet really mentality where really that has the opposite effect, as we all know. Freedom of religion, you know, produces a much better culture. And in fact, clamping down does cause people to group together. And if if they're afraid of extremism, the choices they're making are not the ones that will favor the outcomes that they say that they want. But I was even told by a government official last year, I think it was, from Kazakhstan, that, you know, he was proud that they were stopping women from being forced to cover up. And, you know, just the different ways that they spin it doesn't always make sense. But at the end of the day, it does seem that there's this real fear that they will the religious extremism will grow. But it doesn't always explain why they're clamping down on Jehovah's Witnesses or other religions as well. Hmm. So there does seem to be a fear of kind of all religion, this embracing of secularism. So that seems to be part of that Soviet culture.
So what appears to be their objective behind this then? I mean, what is the ideal picture of the country that they have in mind?
Secular. People, their religion is really secondary, and we all know that these rules will in the long run have a detrimental effect on their communities. And you know, with Uzbekistan in particular, I mean, the one thing was clear to us with all the meetings we had is everyone was telling us privately and publicly things have gotten better. You know, they aren't raiding non-registered religious gatherings the way they used to. They aren't throwing people in jail for not being registered. Everyone's still kind of afraid and being very careful. But for instance, there are things like, you know, Uzbekistan has, you know, religious literature has to be approved. You know, if you have something on your computer, literally they destroy your computer. The stories of things in the past. Now that necessarily, I don't know if anyone's done that this year, but still there's a they prohibit the private teaching of religion. So if you want to become an imam, you can't hire or work with or even just be mentored by another imam. That would be against the rules. We had this conversation with quite a few government officials and they kept saying, oh, their family should be teaching them about Islam. They can't can't be taught by someone else. So there's real government regulations that absolutely interfere in religious affairs for the country.
Yeah. You said that their picture of Uzbekistan is kind of secular. Just a couple of weeks ago, I had a chance to interact with the Uzbekistan's justice minister when when I confronted him with the problems female students of Islamic University facing. He didn't elaborate much except saying that, you know, that particular case was resolved. And then there was another gentleman next to him, and he said, you know, there's a certain rule, especially talking about the state-funded schools, which does not include headscarves. And he also said, nor does this include miniskirts. So, I mean, what kind of picture of secularism they have in mind? We understand the headscarves, then why not to allow miniskirts?
Right. There really is an inconsistency with the way they're approaching this, which is why it's not always making a lot of sense, is why they're choosing to come down so hard on one thing and like you said, not something else. So I know in Uzbekistan, they do have a roadmap they agreed to that they'll move towards religious freedom. They have a 1998 law on religion of conscience and religious organizations that they're currently working to revise. We really do hope that makes some changes. For instance, one of the problems in Uzbekistan is there is a criminal code for all of these different regulations. So, you know, an aggressive security force or, you know, in a region can go after somebody and put them in jail because they had, you know, a Quran on their phone or because they had something that wasn't approved in their possession, which has been a lot of what has caused some of these people to go for very long prison terms in the past for simple acts such as those.
Yeah, it also kind of reminds me Turkmenistan's former president Niyazov. He had his own vision how his nation should look like. He acted based on that. So Rustam, in your country, Tajikistan, you went through all these horrible, terrible experiences just because you wear beards. So how would your authorities explain why they stopped you, why they forced you to shave your beards?
I think that the thing is that the beard or headscarf is an indicator of being extremist, like extremist thinking people. Then secular people should be in their mind atheistic. They have no belief to God and something like this, and that's why I think in this situation the government thinks that the secular society is a totally atheistic society, and that's why they fight against beard, against all these symbols of Islam.
Interesting. I think I don't recall how those people looked like, the ones who claimed responsibility for attack on tourists in Tajikistan a couple of months ago. Did any of them had beards on their face?
No, actually they don't. They didn't have. No beards, no headscarves, no one of these symbols of Muslim people.
So Bruce, whatever they have in mind behind this crackdown or repression, this has a huge impact on the lives of day-to-day people. Earlier we were talking about the story of a man in Tajikistan who was denied passport because he wears beards. So what are some of the other similar examples from Tajikistan and elsewhere in Central Asia?
Well, as far as not getting a passport, this happened in Turkmenistan. Our Turkmen service reported on it in January that they wouldn't give anyone a passport that had a beard. You had to shave before you did that. You know, I mean, a lot of this stuff is it defies reason sometimes. I get that they're worried about, you know, people's physical appearance because somehow they figure that they can equate that with some desire to do harm to the state or become an Islamic radical or something like that. But, you know, I've never worn a hijab, so I can't really speak to that very much. But certainly, you know, when I was a teenager, there was a lot of guys that wanted to grow beards. You know, it showed that you were getting older, that you were becoming an adult. You know, it gave you the feeling that you were growing up. Some people thought they looked better with beards. You know, so it's something I think every young man thinks about when he gets to be 16, 17, 18. Maybe I'll grow a beard, you know, and see how it looks. And what's really strange about the way it works in Central Asia is the Aksakal, the white beard, is a very honored figure in society. This is an elder person, and they're expected to have beards. But a Karasakal, you know, a black beard, apparently is not permissible in these societies, which is very strange. It almost gives like an age gap somehow or another, that you have to be a certain age before you can grow this beard. Otherwise, you're suspect of being a Muslim. You know, in Tajikistan, and I'm sure Rustam would remember, they had a football player a few years ago who was a good football player, and he got into all kinds of trouble because he had a beard. You know, it had nothing to do with his. Yeah. Everyone knew he was playing sports. They knew that that's what he liked to do, but he had a beard. So all of a sudden that wasn't, you know, whether he was a good athlete or not, whether he was really truly interested in football or not, didn't matter. The fact was he had a beard, and he couldn't have a beard and play football, you know, according to them. So, you know, it's at that level.
Yeah. So in the case of Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and of course Turkmenistan, it's very clear where the authorities stand in this. What role do the authorities play in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan in this exercise? Aroka, do you want to jump in here?
So in its religious policy, Kyrgyzstan utilizes this different terms to control religion. So I think in comparison with other neighbors, religious diversity is rising in Kyrgyzstan due to a lighter government control. But we see this isolation of local Islam that is being practiced. So even though we see this freedom of space where people can pray, can wear a beard, or can walk in the street with hijab, but we see this certain type of Islam, this certain type of isolated religion that was created within the sphere of the country. So why would this help to government, right? This is the question that should be raised. So isolation of local Islam will gradually help to make easier authorities to repress any opposition, whether it's religious communities, and it will help to stifle peaceful dissent and even like detain and imprison people because they are not following certain type of traditional religion, traditional Islam, or the Islam that was ancestral to the Kyrgyz history. And I think the way they manage actually helps for them, for the authorities, to create this pool where they can control whom they will give voice and whom they would not.
Commissioner, you know, it's clear that people are coming back to their religious roots. This is what we have seen in Central Asia. And you can't deny them whatever you do, talking about the authorities. So what's the best path for authorities to handle this? I think Aroka used a very nice word, how to manage this process.
Right. Well, we obviously think being able to freely, openly practice their faith would be the best road for all of these countries. And we understand it's a different mindset for them to understand how their culture would look, how their communities would look, and how actually what they're doing now is the kind of actions if would encourage radicalization, where freely practicing faith does not. So if anything, I think they have it backwards. And some of the problems that they have been because of their large prison populations and their oppressive policies. And so we really do encourage them. And we encourage, of course, we at the Commission make recommendations to our own government. So, you know, we in each of these countries have made recommendations to the State Department, to Congress, things they can do to help each of these countries to move in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But for instance, we know that like Turkmenistan, you know, the State Department is actually given a waiver to them for their CPC designation. They actually get, there are no consequences for that. You know, so we obviously recommend they take that waiver away and start working with them to try to move away from some of these policies. And we know even baby steps are good things, you know, just as we're seeing in Uzbekistan. I think we're seeing some small steps, and hopefully their dialogues with countries and understanding in dialogue with people, and even allowing, I mean, we met with bloggers that are now in Uzbekistan talking about these situations, like the beard incident, you know, and of course, even the governor who did get reprimanded by the Senate, which is an unusual public rebuke. So there are some things we're seeing in Uzbekistan that are positive, and the fact that these bloggers, that they're letting them speak, and yet they're not causing violence, right? Their discussion about what's happening, if anything, is causing a really healthy dialogue to begin in their country. So I think as they start seeing these positive consequences of the loosening of their rules, hopefully they'll continue to see that they'll want to keep going down that road. And of course, the State Department has a very close relationship with Uzbekistan and is really hoping they'll continue to move forward. We would love to take them off our list completely too. But what happens in the next year in terms of this 1988 law, and how they're interacting with their religious communities will determine that.
Right, right. You know, it's very good suggestions there, Commissioner. Thank you very much. Rustam, is there anything you guys could do? I mean, imagine your government is listening to us, and I'm sure they do. Tell them why you wear beards and why it should be okay to wear beards.
If they are hearing, and I just say that it's my decision to have beard. And it doesn't relate to, maybe in sometimes youth have beards, and their beard doesn't relate to the Islamic views or to the religion, because it just is part of your body. It's your right to have beard, to have hair on your head or something like this. That's why if we create new democracy in post-Soviet Union, that's why we have to recognize that everybody has their own rights. Also to make a decision, to decide themselves, to have beards, to have a scarf or something like this, because it's my own decision. It could not be the part of the policy of the government.
Right. Aruka, what would be your comment on the same question? So explain yourself to the authorities there. I mean, why you wear hijab and why it should be okay to wear hijab, why they shouldn't be bothered by this?
So again, coming to the question of the definition of Islam, first of all, I would like to say that Almazbek Atambayev said hijab is not part of traditional Islam, and merely it was borrowed from an alien tradition. So like this statement has raised eyebrows among Muslims, girls who are wearing hijab. And after that, girls couldn't enter schools with their hijab. Mm. And so labeling institutions as extremist or as a certain type has now reached absurd proportions. So hijab is a part of Islam. And whether you call it traditional or not, it is a component and it's a very important part of religion that everyone has right to practice, whether it is at home, whether it is at school, and it shouldn't be challenged by the definitions the authorities are imposing over the people, over the Muslims, and it shouldn't be influenced by the outside statements of the government.
Right. Okay. Unfortunately, we also need to conclude the discussion here, but let's end it with, Bruce, your comments. So what would be your suggestion to the authorities, how to manage, how to handle this as someone that you have seen what kind of situation it leads to when it gets really worse? We have seen the early 90s and all these things.
Hijabs and beards are part of a lot of cultures, and they're present in many countries around the world, and that is not evidence of any kind of radicalism or extremism at all. They start heading with this, it's a real slippery slope. I mean, we saw what happened with the Uyghurs in Xinjiang, for instance. This is how this all started. You know, they said they wouldn't let men on the bus that had beards. They wouldn't let women on the bus if they had Islamic clothing on or hijab. And look at where we are now. And the people of Central Asia aren't ignorant about what happened in Xinjiang, and they're finding out more about it all the time. This is very bad. Now, you know, Ruka mentioned Atambayev was the one that commented on it. And Rustam will also remember that Rahman has. It's very strange that the leadership feels compelled to talk about this. Rahman didn't want women wearing Arab clothes, but his objection was that it was black. And it made it look like they were in mourning, you know, and that's kind of ridiculous. Now Atambayev talks about, well, hijabs aren't part of Islam, but Atambayev also said that it's actually okay to drink alcohol under Islam, but mullahs don't tell you that you can have just a little. You know, so listening to these people for religious wisdom is absolutely ridiculous. They shouldn't comment on it at all. They should leave that to qualified and authentic religious scholars to comment, to figure out what's happening. In many cultures, in many countries of the world, every generation has a different look.
Right.
We certainly see that, you know, in the United States and in Europe, where, you know, the clothes that I wore are not the clothes that people wear today. The way that my friends and I looked, when we were young people is not the way that young people look today. It changes. You can't say we have this one set of features and appearances that everyone must observe that are the same as when I was a child and the same 300 years ago in our culture, and we won't permit anything which wasn't part of that to be introduced into our society. It's a losing battle.
Yeah. Okay, just one more point pop up in my mind. Commissioner, maybe let's end it with you. Is there any other country who has successfully gone through this, which presents an example for Central Asian countries to copy and implement it in their country to be able to successfully manage this?
That's a really good question. And one of your other guests may be a better person to be able to give another country that's an example. But certainly we need to keep pushing them, the U.S. government, in order to get them to open up, to see the positive consequences of opening up. But one of your other guests may be able to better answer that question on which country.
Okay.
Sorry.
Is there anyone who wants to jump in? Okay, it looks like we are done. Thank you very much, Commissioner Nadina Mainza of U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, for your time and thoughts today. And also big thanks goes Arun Orankizi, researcher at the TRT World, who is originally from Kyrgyzstan, Rustam Gulov, blogger and civil rights activist from Tajikistan, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.